The Vietnam War changed the way this country looks at itself, and it will never go back to the confident stance Americans lived in the wake of the Second World War. Americans who lived through the troubled years of the Vietnam conflict saw their world change before their eyes. Americans who didn't live in its shadow, whether they know it or not. As he did with the Civil War years ago, documentary filmmaker Ken Burns is about to generate a national discussion of the war with his public television series that starts Sunday night. We wanted to anticipate some of that discussion and invite listeners to take part by calling us at this number, 941-3689, 877-941-3689. With me in the studio are two Vietnam veterans, Air Force vet Vic Kraft, Marine Corps veteran Gary Sira, and we're going to kick off a little bit of a discussion of the Vietnam War, but we do want you to take part. So let me give those numbers one more time, 941-3689, 877-941-3689, and we hope you'll weigh in with your own comments and questions. But Vic and Gary, I spoke of the war as something that changed America forever, and something I said, as I said, we live in its shadow whether we know it or not. You think that's true for young people today, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely, but I don't think they'd have any kind of a historical background regarding how we got there.
Yeah.
As we discussed earlier, it's a matter of having faith in government and having faith in the country. And I think that that was one of the reasons why we did go. We did have that faith, but over a period of time, somehow we've lost it.
We had saved the world, or at least as we saw ourselves in the Second World War, and we were kind of about to do it again.
Yeah, our
missionary, a little bit of that spirit, yeah.
Yeah, we had a missionary zeal in a way, and I think that was part of it was by Kennedy. Ask not what you can do for your country, Sorry, I'm getting right one of these
what your country can do for you.
Yes,
right.
That's what you right. Right. But those were the words that we lived by. Somehow or other, be our leaders, politician or business people or civic leaders, we haven't lived up to those words. It's an awful lot of emptiness out there.
Gary, you went to Nam in 67.
I got in country in 68.
In country in 68, in the Marine Corps.
In the Marine Corps.
How old were you?
I was 18 years old.
Were you describe yourself as maybe an idealistic young man? What kind of young man were you?
I can only describe myself as being a day-to-day kind of guy. You know, whatever comes up, you know, then I'll react to it. Nothing that I looked at in the future as far as what's going to happen. You know,
very much the way a young man looks at things, right? You're going to live
because
forever and
unaware.
Uh-huh.
You know what is expected in the future.
How was that changed by your experience?
Well, now, looking back and seeing what we're faced with today, there is a big difference. Back then, as a young 18-year-old, you know, I didn't expect what I was going to get involved in. You know, I just went with the flow of things.
Sure.
You know? And we discussed earlier about, you know, why we were there. Me as an 18-year-old, I had no idea why we were there except for one thing that that my history teacher had asked us back in 1960. Mm-hmm. That's when I was first realized the Vietnam War was happening. And the question was, why do you think we're there fighting this conflict in Vietnam?
In 1960?
In 1960.
That history teacher was ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yes, and his answer was, we're there to prevent spread of communism. Mm-hmm. And I never forgot that.
That was absolutely the prevailing idea at the time, wasn't it?
Right, right, right.
Domino theory. Dominoes will fall.
That's correct. But now, being there, you know, there was, for me, it was different. You know, I was more there and trying to stay alive.
Yeah.
Fighting for myself to survive.
Yeah.
You know, I had nothing to do with anything else but survive and, you know, just being told what to do.
Well, the global perspective doesn't mean a whole lot when you're in that day-to-day
correct
framework. One tour, two tours?
Just one tour. Mm-hmm. Of course, I didn't fulfill my 12-month tour.
You got hurt?
Just short of 2 months, yeah, I got hurt.
But it's you work with veterans today. You communicate with, you're a member of a veterans group, is that right?
Yes, I'm a member of a veterans group out in Kapolei VA Center.
Does it do you some good? Does it do them some good?
You know, it done me some good. Realizing that, you know, there were things that I experienced and things that I had learned there at the vet center that I found that it's important. And knowing that there are many other veterans, you know, dealing with issues, their personal issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of wanted to find a ways to help, you know, overcome that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not where they're at, most of them.
Sure, sure.
You know? So even though I'm told that, you know, Gary, you have the same situation. You're blocking it out, but you're similar. You have the same issues. And for some reason, I haven't gotten to that point yet to accept that, you know, I have the same issues that they're dealing with.
But by communicating back and forth, you're opening a door. I mean, it's a process.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's find out what we were asking, as I said earlier, we were asking people to call in at 941-3689. We have a caller on the line. I'm going to ask our producer, Lillian, to hook that caller up. Beth? Hi, Beth, yes. You're on the line.
Thank you. My experience with Vietnam was that I was a Pan American stewardess flying out of Los Angeles at the time, and we flew MAC charters and did R&Rs, rest and recuperation flights,
right,
out of Guam and into both Da Nang and Saigon, and then we'd fly them to Darwin or Sydney or Guam,
right,
and then take a load back. So I did this for about 2 months. Fortunately, my seniority, I didn't have to do it any longer than that, but my brother was at the same time stationed in Da Nang. And so it was quite emotional for me to be flying into Da Nang, because we would go in at night and pick up a group of men, and it would be a 707. So 150 men, and then take them to wherever, and then bring the next load back.
Beth, what kind of stories did they tell you? What was your impression of the, these are men who were at the end of their tour? They were leaving the country?
No, they were on rest and recuperation, R&Rs.
Oh, I
see. They would be given a week away from the fighting.
So they're still in the middle of it. What kind of stories did they tell you, Beth?
Well, you know, they were very young. I was only 24 at the time.
Uh-huh.
And most of the guys on board were, they were always much younger than me. So they were 18, 19, 20 years old. And so they were extremely polite, and they didn't talk about the stories, because what our purpose was is not only to take them from one point to the next, but at least on the way out of Vietnam, we would have an awful lot of fun with them, play games, you know, and that sort of sing songs, do anything, and put cheesecake pictures on our demonstration life jacket, you know, so that when we pulled the back down, there'd be this cheesecake of this gorgeous woman. And so it was a very lighthearted experience coming out.
You know, Beth, I bet that was really appreciated. I'm sure it is about Gary and Vic are nodding their heads as they hear you tell this story. Because it's that's part of it, and I want to bring Gary and Vic on this. You know, this is something that happened to people, one person at a time, very young people, right? How old were you, Vic?
I was 21.
So you're...
Yeah.
You were one of the older ones, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned, Beth, as being 24. The difference between being 24 and 19 is actually almost a galaxy.
Yeah.
In terms of experience and also how you're looked at. Mm-hmm. Being 21 years old and looking at an 18 or 19 year old kid, it's like you're a grandpa.
That was my immediate reaction. Yeah.
So at least I could go to the NCO club and not have to worry about showing my ID.
Well, I suspect for both of you, Vic and Gary, that this was your growing up time. whatever you were before, you were very different at the end, weren't you?
I like to mention something because Beth kind of brought me back to my memory going over to Vietnam. And it was a Pan Am flight, so I'm wondering whether or not you was one of the stewardesses. But I recall that a plane was full with young kids like myself, a young man, going over on a flight on Pan American. And the atmosphere was a happy atmosphere. And now that I look back, the stewardess was really comforting.
Uh-huh.
They maintained that atmosphere. But looking back now, that all of us was unaware what we're getting involved in.
Yeah.
Until we step foot on the ground.
Were you kind of feeling like this was an exciting adventure, not that much of a fearful experience?
Yeah, I think the mindset was exactly that. Because all through our training, there was never anything to deal with the condition, the environment that we were going to get involved with.
When you first hit that environment, what were the things that surprised you most, Gary?
I was still not acceptable. The serious part of it never occurred until I experienced incoming.
What it was like to be under fire.
Yeah. And even at that time, it took about 3 or 4 rounds to hit before I realized that they're after me, that I can die.
That was a hunk of steel headed for your head.
Correct. Yeah.
What did that do, that first experience? I mean, was there a feeling of calm? Was there, a huge adrenaline rush?
I'll say it this way. When I first got in country, and the veterans, the old-timers there, having a discussion with them, they said, Gary, one guy asked me, he said, Gary, did you ever pray before? I said, yeah. Well, you're not going to realize, but you're going to pray like you never prayed before.
Whether or not you...
But I didn't understand it at that time. But when the incoming did come, it automatically came. And you prayed. And you call out for your mom.
Because, what else can you do, right?
Yeah.
Is there a kind of helplessness to it?
Yeah. And it did help. You had somebody to cry out to.
You hear of superstitions, Vic, where, the one guy who's survived several firefights, you stick close to him because he's lucky. Did you find yourself, believing in luck, believing in, anything you could grab onto?
Well, I didn't want to upset the gods anyway.
Probably not a good
idea.
I
was relating it just the other night as far as there have been several occasions that I've wondered why I'm still here and alive and unscathed. Mm-hmm. When somebody blows up next to you and you're okay, but they're gone.
Yeah.
It can be a traumatic experience, to say the least.
Sure.
My experience was different from Gary's as far as going over. It was 200 and some odd guys in a stretch 8, and it was a sense of foreboding.
You did have that prior to getting in the country.
And it's one of the reasons why we named the program that we do on ThinkTech Hawaii is It Never Got Quiet because from the moment I stepped off of the aircraft onto the ramp, the noise was constant. I mean, it was like warfare all around you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, as I would describe it, as a train wreck in slow motion.
Wow.
That's exactly what it was. There was just death and destruction going on all over the place, all the time.
And you're kind of caught in a vortex, I would think.
Yeah, and especially even with my job, people will think, well, you had it easy. You were an aircraft mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
But we were there to support the ground troops. What was our job? It was there to break things and hurt people. And whether you were a clerk or you're a cook or whatever, you participated and you contributed to that effort.
Vic and Gary, there's a caller on the line. Ron in Honolulu is a two-tour Vietnam vet. Ron, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Ron, thanks a lot for weighing in. Tell us a little bit about what's on your mind.
Well, you know, like listening to your two gentlemen you have that are Vietnam vets. One was in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force also. As a matter of fact, he and I are pretty close to the same age because I turned 21 and 22. I went over there 10 weeks before I turned 21, and I left there about 2 months after I turned 22. Mm-hmm. So I spent my entire 21st year, you know, in Vietnam. And in 16 months, I probably aged 16 years. Now, it just happened that I was on a base that had never been hit. I was on a relatively new base, Phan Rang. It had never been attacked, never been hit. And they were saying that the VC used to come down to our area to go R&R. We were pretty relatively safe because the hookers, the prostitutes, were using their money to, finance the Vietnam War for the VC. Mm-hmm. So they had no reason to bite the hand that fed them. Mm-hmm. I was there during the first actual so-called free election, which meant a communist could actually run for a parliament seat, and he could win, but he'd have to do his campaign on the run. I mean, really on the run.
Yeah.
And if he won, he couldn't take the seat, or he'd be either executed or in prison. And that was a so-called free election. And then the first thing President II did was he made prostitution against the law. So he sent all the girls back. They had to go to Saigon to pick up their ID. They had to leave the areas where they were at. And then all of a sudden, the VC had no more use for us, so then we started getting hit.
Hey, Ron, what year were you there?
Yeah. Pardon?
What year were you there?
1967, the entire year of 68.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I was up there until, as a matter of fact, I even attempted to get my discharge in Saigon. There was a lot of red tape involved. I jumped through all the hoops. And like I said, there was a lot of red tape involved. I did everything I was supposed to do, but I didn't have a passport, so I had to go to the embassy in Saigon to actually get my passport. And when I got down there, I got the same story that I got every place I went. First thing they would say, you can't do this because you need this, you need that. I'd open up my attaché case. I had everything that they wanted. Oh, by the way, that was during what they call a second offensive, where they're fighting like crazy and
Ron, let me just interrupt you.
But to make it real quick, I got to the embassy. They would not issue me a passport, and so I couldn't get discharged in Vietnam. And so I left, and because they would not issue me the passport, I was only there a few minutes. I left 50 minutes after I think I got mortared. They didn't really do me a favor, you know. So, but at any rate, you know, like I talked to a lot of Vietnamese that worked for the U.S. government as translators, and they were, like, educated. They actually had degrees, and asked them what they thought about why we were over there. And one translator who was highly educated, I was sitting at his house in the village, at Top John, and he was telling me that the war in Vietnam was just like our Civil War. He said it was the North against the South. The North wanted to reunite the South, but the South did not want to be part of the North, and they had other factions, which he called the Free World Forces, which was the U.S. and all the Free World Forces were supporting the South, whereas in the North they were being supported by the Russians and by the Communist Chinese, and people were afraid that North Vietnam would be taken over by the Chinese, which he said that was stupid because the Vietnamese and the Chinese were like natural enemies, and so basically that was not going to happen. But at any rate, he told me, remember this. He said the North won. And you think about who's going to win this time. And it's funny because that's exactly what happened.
Ron, thanks very much for calling in. I want to make time for another caller because we've got Philip from Honolulu on the line.
Hello, this is...
Hi, Philip.
This is Philip. Ron's comments were, to my estimation, right on the mark and very valuable to be reflecting on. My perspective on it is I was stationed at Long Bin, where I'm sitting next. They had a pool in a very comfortable area, and right next to it, a MASH-like hospital where troops getting killed coming down. And that huge contrast that existed in so much of the fiber of the infrastructure to support the war is what I reflect on. I came in as a officer through ROTC. Very seductive sense, very clean books you're reading, very noble words coming out of Special Forces and President Kennedy. But finding that so much of the war was basically entrepreneurial sergeants figuring out a way to get whiskey, wine, women, and frustrating, and there was a whole other aspect to our participation there, which was becoming interpreters of war.
I want to ask both of our guests, Vic and Gary, what the you were reacting to that comment, Vic.
There are a lot of Radar O'Reillys that were running around. It was
entrepreneurial,
yes, but not necessarily at the expense of a unit so much, or even for personal profit. It was the go-getter or the scrounge who would scrounge for the unit.
Well-honored military tradition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there were things that you ran out of and you needed, and the boss would ask somebody, hey, can you go get? Sure.
Let's go back to what Ron said about it aged him 16 years and 16 months.
Oh, yeah.
Similar reaction on your part, Gary, Vic?
Well, for me, I never thought about it, but there was some changes in myself that I realized. It's because... when we're in country, we get to a point where we accept things, you know, the surrounding and the environment and the people and the things that are happening. Mm-hmm. Once you get to that point, you kind of, well, for me, I kind of let go. Then I become part of it, you know, and not be concerned
let
about what's
going on.
Let go in
terms of surrendered to your circumstances,
right.
Accepted that this is the life I'm living now.
Yeah, right. And my experience that I've seen, guys, like I was talking about earlier, you know, a bunch of guys in a plane going to Vietnam, not realizing what they're getting yourself involved with.
Happy-go-lucky.
But, you know, I experienced one of the local guys that I met on the ship, and he was going in country. He's an infantryman, and he was going in country. He was nervous as hell.
Yeah.
So he went before I did, and when I got into country, I met up with him several months later. He was a completely different individual.
Really?
He's grown. He had grown up. It's almost like overnight.
Wow. That way for you, Vic?
Yeah, I've been told, and again, it's sort of a subjective thing, or you can't be objective about yourself and how you behave before you went in versus when mm-hmm. you came back. Mm-hmm. Friends and relatives told me that I had changed considerably.
Yeah.
Hard
to see yourself.
Yeah, it is hard to see yourself, and that's one of the things that we deal with at the vet center in understanding what they do. I mean, it's a great program as far as bringing vets in and helping them get through this stuff. And I mean, we do volunteer work or whatever. Gary does work at the Kalaeloa Heritage Park and as a docent, and also helping to clean up around there mm-hmm. and. That's one of his other hobbies that he takes great pride in.
Yeah. Well, it certainly has informed both your lives, and I would think in some ways for the better.
You can't help but mature.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inevitable, and it's how you handle it. Gary's handled it beautifully as far as not experiencing the things that he said that other people have experienced mm-hmm. and waiting for that to happen. I don't think it's going to happen to him. He's managed to do it quite well.
But it's something you've had to deal with. You can't ignore it, right?
Right, right. Like I said earlier, you know, I deal it on a base-to-base basis. You know, my experience in Vietnam and my past experiences that I got involved with, you know, for me, I kind of put it in my subconscious. And I don't worry about it.
If that works for you, it works,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Hey, I want to thank the people who called in, Beth, Ron, and Philip, the callers. And I especially want to thank Vic Kraft and Gary Serra for taking part of this discussion. Really,
thanks for having us, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate
to talk
it.
To both of you gentlemen. Vic Kraft and Gary Serra are Vietnam War veterans. Vic served in the Air Force, Gary in the Marine Corps.